You're listening to Radio Rehab, the most informative substance abuse program on the airways. Your host is Lisa Seif, who's the director of the Ward County Court Substance Abuse Program. You can pick up the phone right now and give Lisa a call at 812-424-1400. Or if you're outside of Evansville, it's 1-888-846-7867. Radio Rehab. And now, here's Lisa Seif.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to Radio Rehab. It's good to be back and continue talking to people on a regular basis about recovery and how you can get sober, where you can get sober, how different people have gotten sober and drug-free, and just, you know, the kind of things that turn people's lives around. We appreciate you listening, appreciate you calling in. Don't hesitate to call if you have any questions, 424-1400. Because the women I have today are pretty open and honest about their recovery and who they are, and I think it's appropriate that they're here visiting us today because on the tail end of Betty Ford's funeral, who has done so much for women and alcoholism, Harriet and Pam are going to talk to us about their stories and two women and their recovery from alcoholism. So I have known Harriet for a long time, but she finally got sober in 2000. And, you know, some people, you can see it everywhere, they just get right involved immediately. Harriet was one of those women that wanted sobriety and did whatever it took, got with the winners, went to lots of meetings, talked to a lot of people and asked a lot of questions. And I think that's the sign of somebody trying to get in recovery when they ask a lot of questions instead of try to debate everything you say. And Harriet was like a sponge just asking. She had a son who you all know who has been here and hosted, Trey. We love him. So it's affected her whole family, her sobriety. She also brought Pam, who is somebody that she sponsors, and I think they're going to talk to you about sponsorship and how important that is in recovery, too. So I am real glad to have them here on the anniversary of Betty Ford's death, for sure, and plus just my love and respect for Harriet. So I know you will appreciate hearing her story and understanding a little more about her and how she does this sobriety thing, along with her friend Pam. So, Harriet, thank you so much for coming.
Well, thank you for having me. Pam and I are here to help carry the message.
Yeah.
And, you know, when I first got here, I really didn't want to be here. It took me 2 weeks of going to a lot of meetings before I finally realized that I really was an alcoholic and I didn't have any place else to go. I barely had a home. I barely had a husband. I barely had my son, mm-hmm. and barely had contact with my grandson. You know, my grandson was 10 when I got sober, and there was always that, no, you can't go to Granny's because Granny's drinking today, or mm-hmm. Granny's drunk, and, well, you know, it's not like that today, and we have mm-hmm. a really good relationship. I have a good relationship with most everybody in my family,
mm-hmm.
and it's all due to this program. But I was around for about 2 weeks and went home one night and sat down and cried. My husband at the time said, what did I do this time? Because, you know, they always were the blame for everything.
Who, the husbands?
Yeah, or the wives or whatever, you know. Anyway.
Blame someone else.
Yeah, I don't want to take it. And I cried and I said, I just really don't want to be an alcoholic. And I have changed my mind then because I'm grateful to be an alcoholic. There's a solution, you know, and I have mm-hmm. found that in Alcoholics Anonymous. It's just been a great deal for me and for my family, for my son. My son had mentioned on here before that he thinks perhaps my grandson may have some problems, you know, and I may have blinders on when it comes to that. I'm not real sure that he does. He's a responsible citizen today, and he's doing the right thing. Just recently got engaged and just called me not too long ago, and I may become a great-grandmother, which...
We'll
cross that bridge when we get there. I'm a little young for all that, but that's okay.
I agree.
Anyway.
So are you from Evansville, born?
My parents moved here when I was 5. I'm originally from a little town up north of Terre Haute. But I have alcoholism in all my family. My mom's sister was an alcoholic, and she died at 42 of this disease in that mm-hmm. little bitty town of Cayuga. And... my grandfather, her dad, my mom's dad was alcoholic. The last time I saw him was walking down a street in a little town over in Illinois, staggering down the street. And, you know, my cousin and I chose not to stop and talk to him. And you know, and he died of this disease. My father was an alcoholic. My dad did stay sober for 18 years before he passed away, but he was very, very dry. Very dry. Mm. He didn't change anything about him except he just didn't drink. And you know what I found in Alcoholics Anonymous was I was about 4 months sober and I was describing my dad. And my dad was belligerent, obnoxious, all those adjectives that we use, overbearing. And I was like, I just described myself. Mm-hmm. But being around you people, I realized that I didn't have to be like that, you know, that I could change. I thought those, I didn't know they were character defects. I thought they were just traits that I inherited, you know, and I didn't know I could change them. Mm-hmm. And I'm working on that on a regular basis today for all of those that are wrinkling your nose about my character defects.
Well, thank God they give us character.
Yeah, really, really.
So, and this is seventh month, seventh step. Yes, well, there you go. Yeah, there, yeah, that tells us yeah, that they can be
removed.
That's
where we're at,
isn't it? Yeah, yeah. So how did you and when did you start drinking?
I actually didn't start drinking until I was about 22.
Really? So you got all through adolescence.
Yeah. I drank a little bit the summer after we graduated from high school. You know, go to drive-in movies and have a little cherry vodka and that kind of stuff. And the night we graduated from high school, we had a six-pack and there were six of us. So, you know, we thought we were big rollers.
Six-pack amongst six. Yeah.
Now, I had friends in high school that drank. I didn't. I just didn't run around with those people. But I didn't start drinking until I was about 22 and was getting my divorce, my first divorce. And being divorced and being a hairdresser kind of went hand-in-hand with going out and partying. And that's mm-hmm. what I did. And I partied a lot for the next 5 years until my next marriage. And
so you hit your 20s. You yeah. had a career.
Right.
And you thought, I'm good. Yeah. I'm going to go out and party with the girls. I'm single.
I thought I had a wonderful babysitter. I always thought I had good babysitters. You know, I always thought my son was taken care of.
Mm-hmm.
I've heard his story, and I realized that I didn't always have the best babysitters, and he wasn't doing what I thought he was supposed to be doing. Mm-hmm. I didn't check up on him any time as he got older and was able to go out on his own, you know, because it was
you
all about
was
me.
Okay.
Yeah, it was all about me.
Oh, your alcoholism had
right.
already progressed.
Right. It was all about me and who my next date was, who my next husband was. You know, I wasn't the worst mother in the world, but I certainly by far could have been better.
Well, alcohol took over, it sounds like.
I would like to share this one thing, and I like to tell women, well, not just women, but parents in recovery, you know, we have that horrible feeling when we look back about what we did to our children and how we were when they were growing up, and I will always, always have a tug at my heart when I look back and see that I could have been a different kind of mother. Someone mentioned to me that I hadn't worked thoroughly a fourth step on that. I talked to my sponsor about that, and she said, no, it just means that I'm a very good person.
Mm.
And, you know, I can't go back and change any of that. We all know that, but I can try to be the best mom I can today, best friend, best sister.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So is it, you think that just the lifestyle of alcoholism robs us of being the best woman we can be in whatever area?
Mm. Absolutely.
And when you're in your 20s, you were 22,
the
had a career.
On, yeah.
So were you a bar drinker?
Oh, absolutely. I loved
Me
people.
Too. Yeah, I love those bars.
You know, and somewhere after, you know, along that line, I crossed that line where I couldn't live without that alcohol.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, as I got older, and the last several years of my drinking were really, really, really obnoxious time for me. People would get up and move, you know, from the bar stool because they didn't want to hear my opinion on anything, you know.
Oh, no. You went from being the bell of the ball to the ball of the bell.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's what alcoholism does.
Yeah.
Sucks it right out
yes,
of us.
It does.
But do you think at 22, how do you tell a 22, 25-year-old?
You know, I've been thinking a lot about this lately. I have a brother that lives here. That his name is Larry. And he is probably one of the kindest, nicest people you will ever want to meet. He's 14 months older than I am, and we're very, very close. We haven't always been because my alcohol drinking got in the way. When he came home from Vietnam, he drank a lot, and he partied a lot, went out a lot. My mother said to him one day, your dad and I think you're drinking too much. He quit. He just stopped.
I hate people like that. I know. They can just quit when somebody says, I think you need to quit.
I know that they had said that to me many, mm-hmm. many times, but mm-hmm. I didn't. I didn't hear them. I didn't want to.
You couldn't.
And, no, it was because of my disease, you
mm-hmm.
know.
Do you think it was different being a woman alcoholic than a male alcoholic?
I think that it hits us faster. I think it progresses faster. I've read that in the big book, and I know maybe not so much in my case, but I know other women that it has really hit. I have a friend of mine that was visiting from England, and she was telling me about a friend of hers that just started drinking 2 years ago, and she was already just really in the throes.
Yeah.
She's 35 years old, but she's 37
lean,
now.
Lean body mass.
Yeah.
Plus, I think the psychosocial stuff that us women carry around.
Right.
So all through your 20s, Harriet was pretty much a drinker, but she'd go to work.
I did.
Because you worked at the same place. I mean, you were in your profession for 45 years.
45 years.
And drinking?
The whole not all the time. I was a heavy drinker. Not always. It actually depended on who I was married to. I did. I married this man. It was a wonderful, wonderful man. We had a wonderful relationship. We adored each other. And we got married in 1985. And I had just gotten out of treatment. I'd been out of treatment about 6 months. But I had dated him 2.5 years prior to that.
So he knew you
as
a drinker.
Yeah, he did. But we didn't know. Neither one of us were really into the alcoholism part. Mm-hmm. Neither one of us really knew that.
Right.
You know. And we moderately drank for a while. He was diagnosed with cancer. And after he passed away, then my drinking really took off.
Mm-hmm.
Really, really spiraled. I used a lot of enhancements, you know, pills and smoked pot. And hey, Jane, how you doing?
Look who's here.
It's good to
Our
see you.
Our favorite radio
I know,
rehab
I just
friend.
Love her.
Yep.
But anyway, it really took off after that because, you know, I had a lot of pity parties on account of that. You know, well, you know, my husband died and blah, blah, blah. And I drank a lot.
Well, yeah, you had your partner out of the way, and you were lonely probably and grieving. And
all the reasons.
By then you were in love with alcohol anyway.
Oh, absolutely. And drinking for all the reasons that I shouldn't have been drinking.
So by then it turned into more of a medication drinking as well as going
out
and partying.
Yes.
At no time in that period did it occur to you, this is insanity?
Oh, I think maybe in the back of my mind, but I was not ready to give it up. You know, we fight it.
Mm-hmm.
We fight it. When I first got sober, I got sober in March, and the first holidays, I think, are really hard for people. And
That first year.
Really, really
holidays.
Hard. And that Thanksgiving came up, and I wanted to drink really, really bad. And I went to a meeting that Thanksgiving morning. And, of course, you know, I wanted everybody to come to my house and eat when I wanted them to and to, you know, and Trey wasn't behaving right. And,
not
you know,
Trey.
Eat what I prepared. And I was just struggling with all that controlism. But you all remember Norma's husband, Doug.
Mm-hmm.
And he was always at that morning meeting. And he said, we need to talk. And I said, well, when? He said, right now, sit down. Because he really cared about people staying sober, even though it was a struggle for him often.
Right.
But one of the things that he shared with me, he said, you need to pray for that obsession to go away. And so I did, you know, and that's a real simple thing that we do, but we don't think of it on our own. And that's why we need people like us to tell us what to do, to remind us.
Some direction.
Right. And I started doing that. And when the obsession went away, I couldn't tell you. It just went away. I did not have a desire for a drink until January of this year.
Really?
And at 10 years of sobriety, we were dealing with my mother and getting ready to put her in a nursing home. And I wanted to drink. I wanted to drink. I actually didn't want to drink. I just didn't want
to
feel the emotions of what we were dealing with, you know. And so I did the things I was supposed to do. I called my sponsor. I went to meetings. I worked with other women, you know, and I talked to a lot of other women. My sponsors have no idea. I don't think they do have any idea how they help us until they start sponsoring women on their own.
Yeah.
So I got through that. My mom's in a nursing home, and everything's okay. And for the first time in my life, I'm living by myself, and I'm loving it.
Yeah.
I'm not glad that she's where she's at, but, you know, I've always had my son with me, or I've always had a husband, and then my mom, in her Al-Anon way, ended up moving in with me, you know, and I'm loving it. It's hard to get me out and about. I have to make myself go places, not meetings, but social.
I've gotten that way, too.
Yeah.
I just like being home.
I do, too.
With nothing and no one around.
I've thought about getting a dog, but I'm not sure I want that commitment.
You're just enjoying it.
I really am.
Well, so did you end up kind of being a parent to your own mother?
Yes, I was. Yes.
So you've just been a mom forever and a wife.
It was really good. It was a great experience. I don't regret any of that, you know. And my mom is, she's still somewhat in her right mind, and she...
Does she know you're in AA?
Oh, yeah. She's thrilled. She's thrilled. She after my dad died, they lived in Florida, and my dad died in 1998. And I have another brother that lives in Texas. And he talked my mom into going to move into Texas. So she moved down there for 4 years. And then through some courses of events, my brother, Larry, and I got her to move up here. Mm-hmm. And it's been wonderful. Oh, she lived by herself for a long time until I separated from my husband. And then I went to stay with her, and then the next thing you know,
she's
looking for some place to buy, and it worked out the way it was supposed to. You know, it really did.
Yeah.
And we care for her. My brother and I take care of her, and
what a gift.
We did that before she went in the nursing home. He's a stand-up guy, I'm telling you.
What a gift.
Yeah.
To be sober.
Well, about this brother, you know, I remember about 3 or 4 months before I got sober, he told me, he said, "Don't call me anymore when you're drinking," and that. Oh, it just killed me. Mm-hmm. It killed me.
So even your family didn't want to hear from you.
Yeah. My family in Texas said they just hung up on me when I called. And you know, I don't know about that. But anyway, I have a brother that lives in Texas. That he's 3 years older than I am. And I think that he should go to NA. And I don't mean Narcotics Anonymous. I mean
Narcissistic Anonymous.
No, he's a great guy, and he's done very well for himself.
And he'll tell you how great he is.
He will. He actually has a portfolio, and you can look at it. But he has done very well. And but we just don't see a lot of things eye to eye.
Yeah.
And our conversations are pretty limited. And I care about him, and I love him. And he has great kids, and I love them and the grandkids. And
that's something. Yeah. I have a brother like that, too.
Yeah,
you love them because they're your blood, but you don't have a lot in common.
And he's coming up next month and
visit mom.
I told my friend last.
Visit your mother.
He's coming up to go to his class reunion.
Oh,
that's what I was telling my friend last night at dinner. I said I'll be going to a lot more meetings. I'll be praying.
He'll be around. Is he staying with you?
Oh, absolutely not.
Yeah. This is where we protect our sobriety,
yeah,
for sure.
Yeah, you know, that extra bedroom. I don't think my mattress would be comfortable enough.
For him.
No. I'm not trying to really talk bad about him. No. He has his own agenda.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad you came through that pain of your mother and putting her.
Oh, yeah.
That's got to be hard.
It was.
On us.
It's
and
very
anything
hard.
That's hard on us emotionally, you're going to have those choo-choo train thoughts of numb me out.
Wanted to do that.
You know, I've always said we alcoholics can't afford the luxury of a drink when we've had a bad day. Other people can. You can have a drink if you're in a traffic jam, and we can't afford that luxury.
No. But, you know, and I remember Kathy B. saying this one time several years ago, that when good things happen was when you want a drink, too.
Yeah.
And that's true.
The Colts won, the Colts lost.
Yeah.
It's sunny, it's raining.
Oh, we had a baby. Oh, well, today I have ice cream. Or,
Alcoholics drink.
Yeah, that's what we do.
So we've got Jane and Pam here with us, Harriet, today. Hi, you guys.
Hi.
We're getting ready to take a break, but don't go away, Radio Rehab. We're going to go into a great discussion. Harriet will introduce us to her new baby and explain to you why we call her that, Pam. And Jane's a friend and co-host here at Radio Rehab, so we will be right back.
When did your life stop being fun? When did you start giving in to your anxiety, your worry, your fear and depression? At what time did you stop being able to snap out of it? If being happy seems like something you'll never feel again, it doesn't have to feel that way. I'm Lucinda Bassett, founder of the Midwest Center for Stress and Anxiety. I suffered for over 20 years with anxiety, depression, and panic attacks until I took control of my life. That's why I founded the Midwest Center, so people like us could have somewhere to turn to find help. And to help you even more, I'm giving away my powerful free CD to everyone who calls in. You deserve to be happy, and there really is something you can do to help yourself, starting right now. Please call for your free CD. Call now.
Please call right now, and we'll send you a powerful, life-changing CD.
absolutely free. Call 1-800-931-3795. That's 1-800-931-3795. 1-800-931-3795.
Ashley Furniture Home Store's Freedom to Choose Clearance Extravaganza ends July 4th. Our warehouses nationwide have been marked down for this once-a-year sale. You'll find values never before seen on furniture. This is it. Don't wait for the holiday. Shop now for the best selections and best values on furniture in America. Only at Ashley Furniture Home Store can we offer such great values. There's limited quantities and they won't last long. Plus, get up to 30 months no-interest financing. The Freedom to Choose Clearance Extravaganza ends this week at Ashley Furniture Home Store in Evansville.
Getting farther faster means earning your MBA and more. That's why at DeVry University's Keller Graduate School of Management, we offer career advancement support with a career strategist to guide you, an expert writer to craft your resume, and one-on-one career coaching powered by CareerBuilder, so you can gain both the knowledge to move ahead and the know-how to get noticed. DeVry University's Keller Graduate School of Management. Learn more at keller.edu.
You're listening to Radio Rehab, the most informative substance abuse program on the airways. Your host is Lisa Seif, who's the director of the Warwick County Court Substance Abuse Program. You can pick up the phone right now and give Lisa a call at 812-424-1400. Or if you're outside of Evansville, it's 1-888-846-7867. Radio Rehab. And now, here's Lisa Seif.
We are back, and oh God, Harriet and I were just laughing about being single. We can stay busy in our relationships within the fellowship for sure. So we're just coming back, and Harriet's going to introduce us to her friend Pam, who is somebody that she sponsors, and we'll get Jane in the discussion and just continue going. Don't forget to call 424-1400 if you have any questions. Again, nothing here is below the belt. So I'm going to turn it back over to you, Harriet, so you could introduce us to Pam.
Pam came with me today and felt honored. I don't know why, because it's making me a nervous wreck. But I've been working with Pam for about a year or so, and she'd been around for about a year. Mm-hmm. But she helps me stay sober, you know, and she helps me do the deal. Because we go through the steps, and she had been through part of the steps before, but hadn't completely finished. And
I bet I know which steps she stopped at.
No, she didn't.
Not fifth?
No.
Ninth.
We're right at 8 and 9.
Is that where you stopped?
But that's not her fault. It's just kind of time-wise.
Right.
But, and that reminds me I need to get on her about that.
Uh-oh. You know? Pam, you're not so, getting out of here without an eighth step in the future.
Why don't you share with us a little bit about your story?
Well, thank you. Well, my name is Pam. I've got 2 years sobriety as of May of this year.
Yay.
The big book says, what lengths are you willing to go? Well, I decided to move here because I'm not from Evansville originally, from Washington, Indiana. I was in Stepping Stone at the treatment center, and they take us to out in the community to meetings, and I fell in love with the program down here because I have seen people in the last 2 years that have gone through the gamut of emotional upset, mm-hmm. you know, whether it's a loss of a loved one or jobs, or just now I can see what people are talking about when the newcomer comes in. They don't look up at you. They look at the floor, and mm-hmm. there's crosses in their eyes, and then it's just really good to see.
The recovery.
One thing I want to say about Pam.
She's got some gratitude going
on. Yeah, she does. She really does. She's a weeper. But, you know, we're all weepers. One thing I want to say about Pam, and I remember when she first started coming around, I didn't see her. She went to different meetings, but I did see her occasionally. And she didn't want, you know, people to talk to her and didn't want people to hug. And she is the biggest hugger now. Mm. I mean, you cannot get away from her without hugging.
What a transformation to want to be touched and connected to people.
Well, it's nice to go into a building, any place, and people are glad to see mm-hmm. me. Because they usually, like Harry was saying in the bar, that's what I was a bar drinker. And, you know, after a while, they're like, oh my, here she comes.
They're not buying you drinks anymore, huh?
No, they're not, and I don't understand. I'm still my fun-loving self. You know, just miss personality here, but no.
What made you finally decide?
Oh, one of the main reasons was now he's 18 years old, my son, let me go on record saying that you have to get sober for yourself.
Right.
You can't do it because of your spouse or any of these reasons. But my son did tell me that he turned away from me. He says, I'm done. I'm tired of this. Mm-hmm. And like, oh, okay. Because I have a daughter that's 28, and she's married, or she's with someone and has a couple kids, so I am a grandma, way too young for my dad. And I had a son that is deceased that was between these two children. And Vince, he said, I'm done. And I'm like, that broke my heart because he's my baby. You know, if he's listening to this, I'm sorry, Vince, but you are my baby. Mm-hmm. Always will be. And so that's mainly the main reason. I mean, because of my mother, she's always been my biggest supporter and my biggest resentment, you know. I think they kind of go hand in hand. But she's always asked, you know, why are you doing this? And, you know, and I honestly told her, I don't know. And at that time, I didn't know why I was doing what I was doing. Now I do know because I have the disease of alcoholism. And it is, like the book says, an allergy. Once I take a drink or any kind of mind-altering chemical, I'm different. I'm off to the races.
Jason.
Oh, yeah. That I am still, even though I'm 48 now, my first drink and everything at 13 years old, I still am searching for that buzz, that initial woohoo. And it's been 30-some years, and I ain't never caught it. It's kicked me in the butt, but what we go through, you don't regret the past nor shut the door on it, but what we have gone and experienced in our past will help us with our present and our future.
Yeah, that's the goal. I mean, that hopefully that our experience isn't for nothing, mm-hmm. that sharing your story will help someone else.
Exactly.
I mean, that's how my opinion of how this program works. You know, we don't go through what we go through for nothing. Mm-mm. You know, if you can tell your story and it makes sense to one person, they can relate to that, and it takes them out of that isolation and shame.
Exactly.
You know, that's how we keep this fellowship growing. That's been my experience.
It just seems so simple.
Oh, it is a simple program, but it's not easy.
Because those are the things that keep you in your addiction, mm-hmm. you know.
The isolation.
Thinking that you're the only one that behaves in a certain manner, or that you're the only one that your child said, I'm done with you, or Mom, please don't do that. You know, how humiliating is that to share to someone who doesn't drink the way we do?
Right.
You know, or like Harriet said, there's just, wait, if I accept all this, it means I'll have to quit drinking. Forget that.
Right, exactly.
Not some people just don't want to quit drinking, or they don't think they can.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I was married to this man. I got divorced in sobriety, but he used to buy marijuana for me so that I wouldn't drink vodka.
No kidding.
And
substituting for some weed, huh?
What
Harriet, I can't see you smoking weed, but
oh my god!
Oh my god!
I loved it.
Look at her lights.
I loved it.
She. It what is with
fun.
That love affair with marijuana?
I don't know, but you know the self.
Did you smoke joints?
Oh
pipe?
Yeah. Yeah, well,
bong?
Mostly joints.
But you got out before the blunts got in, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Now it's blunts.
Yeah. But the selfishness and self-centeredness came in. He couldn't smell. And so when he would ask me to please go outside in the garage to smoke it because he was subject to drug tests, and I thought, well, he can't smell. He's not going to know that I'm smoking in the bathroom, you know. And I gave no regard whatsoever to his job, which was my livelihood as well. You know, I was still working, but, you know, when you call your customers up at 4 o'clock in the afternoon time after time and say you have the cramps or something, you know, because you want to go
forgiving
drink,
when
you know.
Yeah. But his job wouldn't be so forgiving.
Exactly. But it didn't happen, and he didn't lose his job. But you know that I'm sure you've all done this. You quit putting ice in your drink because you don't want people to hear your glass mm-hmm. rattle, you know, mm-hmm. and you start drinking the straight stuff. Mm-hmm. I would drink beer at a point, early point, and then when he went to bed, I would get the vodka out and he'd hide the vodka, and we're going to mm-hmm. drink. If we want to drink, we're going to mm-hmm. drink.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you can take all the pot and all the Valium, and I want to drink, too. I got to have that enhancement.
But, yes.
One thing I wanted to share, because I know this happens to a lot of women that I have met in recovery, a lot of women have had things happen to them when they were children, like molestation and things like that, and I know it happens to men, too. And I think that's one thing that we have always guarded our mm-hmm. life, and it was always a big thing for me to drink over, you know, and I carried that with me all my adult life. And then when I got sober and I started working the steps, I was able to let all that go, you mm-hmm. know, because it made me feel less than, it made me feel dirty, mm-hmm. All those things. Mm-hmm. And I'm able to be in the same room with that person today and realize that he was sick. And I don't know whether he's still sick today. I don't have to put myself in that position.
But you've forgiven him?
Yes, I have. Yeah, mm-hmm. to the point that I need to,
right.
you know.
Yeah,
but I know a lot of women have experienced this. And I was at a woman's meeting one night, and this lady said that this had happened to her. And there were like 11 women there. And 9 out of those 11 women are sitting there shaking their head. So, you know, I like
that's
to people not to think that they're the only ones,
oh,
you know.
Sure.
And you can get through all that, you know. It really makes a big difference.
You know, I do the Teen Power Camp every summer.
Yes, I know.
I don't know if I told you, Jane, but this year, I couldn't believe the girls and boys mm-hmm. that shared that they'd been sexually violated.
Yeah, I think it happens a lot more than what we...
I don't want to believe that about our world, but...
Pam was sharing about her son, and I wanted to say my last drunk, and this is really pitiful. My last drunk, I was laying on my kitchen floor, choking on my own vomit, and my son picking me up by the front of my shirt and saying, "Mom, your way's not working anymore, and you're going to try mine." Mm-hmm. And I knew he meant that AA way. Or as that guy said at that meeting last week, called it ANA. That
A-N-A.
Was so funny.
A-N-A.
And I knew A-N-A. He meant that AA way, you know, but I'm grateful for that. And he teases about the claw marks being on the Lloyd Expressway. As they
Trey lifted you up and said,
well, that's how I perceive it.
Sure.
You know,
I could see Trey
doing
that.
There was three people there, and we all have three different stories, but this is mine, and I'm going to tell it my way.
But or whatever he said.
You know, and then getting out there and his... fiancé at the time, who they're dating mm-hmm. now, and I thought, well, I'll take one more Valium, you know. I took those responsibly. I only took them one at a time. I thought that was pretty responsible. And I was going to take one more, you know. I thought, well, this is my last hurrah, and she caught me doing it, and she took it away, and I hated her, you know.
His fiancé?
Yeah, she took that last one away from me, you know?
And that was the last?
It was the last.
Oh, my.
And
well, you heard Jane's son, too, was her final.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Surrender.
But you know, all those
something
little
about
things
you
that
moms
build
with
up,
your kids.
You know, I like that my brother saying that and all those things. And I remember being at a spot shoot and people not wanting me to shoot. And, you know, I don't know why not. I was roaring drunk. I don't know why I put a gun in that woman's hands, you know. Go ahead, Jane. I know you were going
to. No, I was just, you know, when you said about the sons being, you know, mine, that wasn't enough for me. That note.
I mean, I know that won your last drink.
No, that wasn't.
But that
enough
got your
for
attention.
Me, but that was right on the heels of my last drunk. Mm. And on the tails of what you were sharing about in meetings, those things that keep us in our addiction, the things that mm-hmm. get disclosed that keep us isolated, sexual abuse, mm-hmm. thoughts or suicide attempts. Mm-hmm. Lying, deceit, stealing, all those things that are so common in the rooms of AA that we're able to unload, you know, they're socially unacceptable things to talk about. You talk mm-hmm. to someone who is not a recovering person.
After a board meeting or something.
About, you know, I really wanted to go to sleep and not wake up. Or, mm-hmm. you know, my son is putting notes on my hidden vodka bottles. Or your history of being whatever, molested or however that happened. You know, people will shy away from that conversation so quick. But in the rooms, all you get is resounding head shakes and mm-hmm. I understand.
Right. That affirmation.
And we don't have to drink over that crap
right.
anymore.
Right.
You know, it's so
it's a
freeing.
Blessing.
Well, mm-hmm. you know, it seems like for women, I know for this woman, I did not like women's meetings because I never liked women. I can manipulate the man. You know, I took victims. Now, after being in the program, I do like the women's meetings because you can talk about being abused and not with a group of women like Harriet was just saying that 9 out of 11 women were, they've been there, done that. Mm-hmm. So I know it seems like the newcomers that I see in the meetings now, they want to hang out at the mixed meetings, the open meetings. I strongly suggest that the women go to women's meetings, and men can also go to men's meetings. It's not that
there
are
a couple
to.
Men's meetings here now too
mm-hmm.
in Evansville.
Yeah, MPEG
Wednesday
is real big.
Night, mm-hmm.
And Old Stone 3 mm-hmm. Wednesday night.
Right. You know, one of the things they tell you early on in the program is that you're not unique.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's for somebody who wants to be entitled to mm-hmm. continue drinking and drugging, you know, that's all the more reason. Look, this happened to me.
Right.
Well, you go into a room and you share, or you listen, you really listen, you're not unique.
Mm-hmm.
You know, unfortunately, in our dysfunctional society, people are abused mm-hmm. and people
yeah.
kill themselves mm-hmm. and horrible tragedies happen.
People don't
lose
act
jobs.
Right.
People don't act right. Mm. Right.
It's and not it's, fair.
And it's not fair.
But it is,
you know?
What it is.
But it's not, not everyone has to drink over it or
right.
drive over it. And that's what this program teaches you how to do one
yeah.
day at a time. You don't have to do it today.
I think you're right. We can't use that to justify
Mm-mm.
the next round
Mm-mm.
anymore.
Mm-mm.
Yeah. Your friend Daniel that sent this, mm-hmm. Pam, said you were selected because you have been the outcasts of the world and your long experience as drunkards has made or should make you humbly alert to the cries of distress that come from the lonely hearts of alcoholics everywhere.
Right.
It does.
Yeah,
our alcoholism yeah. humbles us to the point we can hear other people's
right.
pain like we've never heard it before in AA.
You know, it's amazing when... Of course, most of the time when you don't want to go to a meeting is when you should go to a meeting. And invariably, you do hear something that you need to hear.
Mm-hmm.
There's a group of women, which I'm looking for more women, anybody listening out there. We take a meeting on Wednesday night to the Safe House.
Mm.
And just the other day, we were sharing that. And this lady said after, she said, I'm so glad you said that because this is what I'm going to deal with when I get out. And can we talk about this? And, you know, so, you know, anytime you share anything that's going on in your recovery and how you're dealing with it.
Brings someone else out
of hiding. It does, yes.
When can people go to the Safe House?
Well, it's usually two women. There's requirements, 2 years of sobriety.
Okay.
And it's on Wednesday at 7:30.
Great.
You need to contact me.
Okay.
And because we're trying, so it's not the same people every week.
Is it alcoholics and addicts only? Can it be family members?
Just alcoholics that go in.
Okay.
And the meeting is Alcoholics Anonymous.
Great.
The women that come, it's not a requirement out there. And the women that come, most of them have just addiction.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, we explain to them, you know, just, you know, substitute all that. And you may find out that you're really alcoholic or both or, you know. So if anybody wants to help us out with that, it's hard to find people to do that.
So they get a hold of you, Harriet?
Yes.
So through Facebook?
Facebook.
Or, okay.
Call me.
Okay. Should they call the station here, 424-1400, to look for you, and we get you the
that'd
message?
Be fine.
Okay. 424-1400, call here at Radio Rehab, ask for Harriet.
And it's a great deal. You know, those women really want us out there.
Yeah.
Really want us. And the thing about it, it's not mandatory that they come.
Mm.
So the people that are there, they want recovery.
Mm. I bet, sitting in a jail cell.
That's my spiel.
Well, that's good to know. That's good to know.
I couldn't make it Wednesday night, and the lady that was going with me, I called her, and I said, I got this going on, and can you, you know, I know you can go by yourself, and I hate it, but if I get done in time, I'll come. And it worked out great for her, and she's, you know, truly blessed in this program, too, and she said it's what she needed,
mm.
you know. And that's what I found, you know, the more when we get so much back mm-hmm. in return.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So
it's definitely 100% satisfaction guaranteed.
Yes, it is.
Service work.
Yes, it is.
Well, we've got to take another break, Radio Rehab. Don't go back. We'll come back, and I'd like to ask our guests maybe how they would deal with somebody that doesn't really want to get clean and sober but needs to. So don't go away. We'll be right back.
WEOA, the most diverse radio station in the tri-state, is proud to announce 2 new exciting programs for our Hispanic friends in the community. Tune in every Saturday afternoon at 12:30 to the new 24/7 Dad's Hispanic program in Spanish, sponsored by the Juan Diego Latino Center. The half-hour show discusses life skills, parenting, and a host of other relevant topics. Conexion Thalia Radio Show. Thalia is a platinum-selling recording artist, internationally known, and nationally syndicated radio host. This popular 2-hour weekly program comes to Evansville by way of WEOA every Sunday afternoon from 12 to 2 p.m. Thalia discusses music, fashion, and entertainment. See you this Sunday at noon for the Conexion Thalia Radio Show, sponsored by the Juan Diego Latino Center.
Small Biz Web Solutions. We specialize in customized websites from scratch for small and medium-sized businesses and other organizations. We pride ourselves on offering quality services at competitive cost. SBWS will meet your custom website needs to provide you with the necessary functions. We will assist you with everything you need to start a website, from hosting and domain names to the content of your site. We will be there every step of the way to advise and explain the process. We are Small Biz Web Solutions, LLC. Give us a call today at 812-228-1034. That's 812-228-1034. Or visit our website at sbws-llc.com.
You're listening to Radio Rehab, the most informative substance abuse program on the airways. Your host is Lisa Seif, who's the director of the Ward County Court Substance Abuse Program. You can pick up the phone right now and give Lisa a call at 812-424-1400, or if you're outside of Evansville, it's 1-888-846-7867. Radio Rehab. And now, here's Lisa.
I'm in the A paper. I'm going to look at it because I missed it.
We are back discussing at break about Betty Ford and what she did for women and alcoholism by providing treatment, and treatment's whole purpose is to help cut through denial so that people can get ready to go to AA and want to be sober. But Harriet wanted to share something that she wanted to be sure to leave us understanding also about her sobriety.
Well, I was always under the impression that it was a religious program, and it's not. It's a spiritual program, Alcoholics Anonymous is. And when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I was raised, you know, in a church, and I believed in God. But where I was at with that was that all the things that had happened to me in my life and the way that I had lived my life, that God didn't have time for me and that I wasn't worthy of. And my sponsor started me on my spiritual connection, and very simply by starting to pray again. You pray for the right things. Mm-hmm. You know, we all have those foxhole prayers. But she just very simply started me out, please help me stay sober today, and then to be sure and thank him at nine.
And one of the, fake it till you make it.
Yeah, and one of the stories I love to tell about her, which she is going to pick up her 17-year chip at the end of this month.
That's awesome.
I would call her and would have this little, what was a major problem to me, like I had a hangnail or something. And
right.
She would, you know.
Everything's a catastrophe the first few years.
Yeah, it is. It's just always a mountain.
It's the way growing up is.
And she would suggest that, you know, the third step prayer. And I would hang up, and I'd be sitting in my recliner, and I'd go, horse crap.
God, I offer myself to thee.
And then I'd think, well, it works for her, so I'm going to try it. Mm-hmm. And I did that for a long time with her. I'd hang up and say, horse crap.
But
it wasn't actually crap. But but it's working for her, you know, and that's how she had what I wanted.
Yeah.
And she had the spirituality that I wanted. I didn't want her husband or her car, because I hadn't seen those yet. But, you know, he's pretty good looking too. Hi, Donnie. But anyway, I just wanted to share that about the program. And one thing that I heard very early in sobriety, a lady named Margaret came down from Vincennes.
She just retired from working at the Vincennes Girls' School.
I wonder if she was still around.
I
will never forget her, because I was...
She worked with us at Mulberry for a while.
Sunday
and Stepping Stone. Yes.
Stepping Stone. And Bill G. got her to give her lead.
Oh,
and she said, if you're new in this program and you don't have that God thing yet, don't worry, just keep coming back. Because I thought I was the only one, you know, like we talked about that uniqueness. Mm-hmm. And I was like, phew, gosh, I'm so glad to hear that.
A lot of people get hung up on
the higher power,
and, you know, think that they have this white light experience.
Or it's got to be a religious meaning.
You know, my sponsor referred me to the back of the big book, and it's that unsuspected inner resource.
Mm-hmm.
That unsuspected inner resource was... This for me was this strength that I found in the rooms.
Me too.
That and it was so. It wasn't, you know, I didn't have to complicate it. She just told me, please in the morning, thank you at night, and then, you know, with some nudging, she encouraged me to get on my knees because that didn't feel natural. Mm-hmm. But you
it
know,
was
the more
it was a new action for you, a new
action.
Behavior.
Right, right.
Yeah.
You know, but it's still that simple prayer.
Yeah.
God, please help me. That's
yes.
That was my
and,
last.
And God is with me all as
all
well.
All as well. That's what you told me too.
Yeah. You said something that reminded me. Oh, I don't know if this was really a spiritual awakening or if it was just a huge moment of clarity. But at 16 months of, I think, thoroughly working this program and putting my all I had into it, I woke up one morning about 5 o'clock. My husband was getting up, getting dressed, and I started sharing all these things with him, and he just kind of looked at me like, are you nuts? And I realized that I probably should keep this to myself until I get to a meeting. But I had this overwhelming feeling that everything was going to be okay. Mm-hmm. And that's all I have ever wanted all my life.
That peace.
Was for everything to be okay. Mm-hmm. And I knew that it was going to be. Mm-hmm. You know, and we have our ups and our downs, mm-hmm. and we have our lives going on. But today, we don't have to drink over it. Mm-hmm. We don't have to scream and holler.
You had that profound alteration
yes.
in your attitude
yes.
about life that you were
and
talking
was,
about in
yeah.
the back of the big book.
Yeah.
A profound change in our attitude toward life.
Mm. And I was going to a meeting over in Weaverton that day, and I remember going really fast, driving really fast. And I had the radio on, the Shirelles were singing.
You were self-actualized.
I was. And I got to that meeting, and Gary Fulkerson was there.
Yes.
And I started sharing this with him, and he was just like, oh, girl, you got it.
Yeah,
you,
yeah. And you can
wonderful.
See that in
yeah.
people's eyes
yeah,
when they
can.
Have that gratitude,
yeah.
the lights on of yeah. gratitude that I see in all your yeah. eyes.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. And then I've always heard a spiritual awakening is just as easy as laughter, because you go into the rooms of AA and they're laughing, and anybody that's outside of those rooms come in and hear the stories that are
yes.
that we tell, and it's like, what are y'all laughing about? Because
mm-hmm.
we're alive. Mm-hmm. Thank you very much. You know,
yes, awesome. And there is that laughing at each other that's loving.
It is.
Loving laughter
it's not loving,
toward each other.
Laughing at you.
Right.
Exactly.
With you.
Well, in the beginning, though, I thought everybody was laughing
oh, yeah.
at me.
You did?
Because, well, it's all about me. You know, one of the very first things I said to my sponsor, the very first meeting that we had when she was going to start working with me is the meeting we met after a 7:30 a.m. meeting, and the meeting was on selfishness and self-centeredness. And I leaned across the table and I said, I'm not selfish or self-centered.
Oh,
and,
you were still in denial.
She very politely, she didn't laugh. She just said, as you grow, you will see. And that's something that I deal with on a daily basis, you know.
It doesn't hit us first.
No.
Maybe it's not supposed to.
Well, I don't think we know the true definition
no.
of that
yeah.
either. You know,
yeah.
So that's why it comes with a handbook.
I didn't understand that selfish, self-centered yeah. stuff at first either. Maybe women have a harder because we are so codependent too.
Right. Well, and you know, it's our jobs to be nurturing and take care of
right.
everyone
exactly.
else.
How can we
exactly.
be selfish? But you know, you think of the lengths that we went to hide our drinking and to make that to you know take that last swig mm-hmm. before you got in the car and. Or whatever. I mean, how selfish are we? We're mm-hmm. so selfish. Oh, God.
Yeah. I hate that even in sobriety.
Yeah.
Out there drinking, and how many times have we drove our children around and we were loaded,
mm-hmm.
you know,
mm-hmm.
to talk about being selfish.
Yeah.
But
my mom, very proud that I'm sober and not drinking. She doesn't know a lot about AA. But in the beginning, when she was still living in Texas, when I was doing my fourth step, and I was still in quite a bit of communication with my brother down there, and he's very proud that I'm not drinking. And he told my mom, he said, well, Harriet's getting ready to do her fourth step. And she said, well, I don't know what that's about. And he said, well, you want me to get you a book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and you can read it. And she said, I don't want to read it. That's as long as she's not drinking, it's okay with me.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the
just
way she is,
simple.
You know? Yeah.
Doesn't need
yeah.
to know all the rest.
No, uh-uh.
Mm-hmm. When you notice all of us talking, the word sponsor has been coming up. My sponsor said,
mm-hmm.
and it's not like they're the idols or the you know on a pedestal. It's just a person that's been there, done that. And Harriet touched on it about they have something we want, that peace, that serenity, even though they're going valleys and up on the hillside, but it's still. Even kill that you don't have to drink, you don't have to drug, you don't have to do any of this. Just simply stick around for the miracle.
Yes.
And it's the little miracles that keep me coming back.
Yep.
Being here with you three ladies is a miracle. You know, and I am honored to be here. Thank you.
We're glad to have each other here.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of ladies, you know, the women that I'm around, you know, my grand sponsor, Ruth, And then Norma, Helen, Sherry, all these women, they're all ladies. Mm-hmm. And I want to be like that someday. You know, I want to be
there. You are, Harriet.
Well, I'm not quite there yet, but I want to be there.
You are, too. You got some heels.
Well, yeah, maybe I should wear them more often. and carry a purse, too. But,
you're like,
you know,
you're the next generation of the Ruth Ann's and Normas. Yeah. Definitely. You got a little toughness in you like Norma and a lot of humor like Ruth Ann and a total love and dedication for Alcoholics Anonymous. So, honey, you're already there.
I'm blessed to have finally gotten sober and to have found this program, period. You know,
if you can stay sober with Trey as your son, that's even a double miracle.
Oh, I've got
best.
I choose not to comment on that.
You're not allowed to comment about your parents on Radio Rehab.
No opinion on outside issues.
He's awesome. It's
he
great.
Is a very good young man. And you
loves
know,
AA.
He
loves
and I can
AA.
Tell you some funny stories about. He was living with me when I was still drinking. And
he lifted you up and said, you're doing it my way.
We had a kind of an apartment in our basement. And he needed a place to stay for a while, and he was there for 4 years,
which
was, was fine. But I was always complaining, why don't you pay rent? Why don't you get a job? And you're trading one addiction for another, because he was going to a lot of meetings. And I know today that's what he had to do to stay sober. Mm-hmm. And I know the times that I would be very, very drunk, he would just look at me and say, bull crap, and he would leave. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure that's probably what his sponsor told him to do, you know.
Yeah.
But then when I finally did get sober, you know, we'd have little mini meetings, I'd be sitting there on the couch, and he at 7 o'clock, and he's walking out the door. I'm chairing today. Aren't you going to the meeting? And I'm like, oh my God, I gotta fix this hair and get out of here. You know.
Well, I think people do see that we want to go to meetings more than anything, and they're looking at us saying, well, you just went from one to another addiction, but.
Well, and people will say, well, do you have to do that for the rest of your life? And I'm like, if I want to be sober, we get to. And if I want to have direction still on what to do in my life, you know.
Absolutely. Can't get far from that radar screen. Well, we've got a few minutes left. Is there anything? This has just been wonderful. It always is. Mm-hmm. Anything, Harriet, you want to close us with, or Pam, Jane?
Just please. Don't graduate from this.
Yeah,
program.
That's true. I was in treatment once before.
We do get to keep coming back to meetings, and that's how the newcomer can look at what good, solid sobriety looks like. Mm-hmm. When people share their experience, strength, and hope, who've had a few 24 hours under their belt. I mean, I don't know what I'd do without you. Mm. You know.
Ditto.
Well, one of our good friends is picking up a 33-year chip tomorrow. You know,
who's
that's
that?
Awesome. Still comes to the meeting every Sunday. Chuck A.
He is tomorrow.
I think his date was actually Wednesday, but that's his home.
Oh, happy. He really was instrumental for me coming in.
He's
happy anniversary, Chuck. I think somebody's called. Mm-hmm. Chuck, happy anniversary. 33. You're an old man now. He comes on
and
here.
And still comes
once.
Around and shares.
Oh, know, definitely. He was a delegate.
Yeah,
for
I
World
that.
Service, yeah. Always has been involved
carry
in carrying
that
it on.
Flag.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. Wow, it gets better and better, too. Is somebody calling in? Hello. Welcome to Radio Rehab. Hello. Are you there? Okay, guess not. I thought somebody called in. I thought, oh, there's Chuck, because he listens. So.
Oh, yeah, I hope he doesn't get it. Upset with
oh, not at all. He said, come on here. He and Tony.
I heard a really good, Helen shared with me 2 weeks ago at the Safe House. I heard that she heard it from Therese, and I don't know where they got this, but I love this, and it says, we are not born winners, we are not born losers, but we are born choosers.
Choosers. I love that.
I never heard that before, and I love it, and I've been sharing it.
That's
all over
a good
the place.
Way to end the show. We're not
winners. We're not born winners. We're not born losers. We're born choosers.
Yes. And Alcoholics Anonymous gave us back our choice.
Right.
Anything else?
Keep coming back.
Yes.
It works if you work.
That's right. And you can find any of us at meetings. There's 160 a week in this town.
Something.
So find a meeting. We'll be there. Thanks, Radio Rehab, for tuning in. Thank you all for coming.
Thank you, Lisa.
Absolutely. You are welcome. Come back. And between now and next Saturday, don't forget to do the next right thing.